Hello and welcome to NextPod, VP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Sedd, and this month we are focusing on practice ownership. To speak on the subject, we have founder and co-president of Mission Veterinary Partners, Dr. Jeff Rothstein. Welcome, Dr. Rothstein.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on the show today.
So we're excited to have you, and we wanted to start off by asking you if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the position that you are today.
Sure, I would be happy to give you a little bit of the long and winding road. I will kind of keep it relatively short here for our listeners. I am a 1994 graduate of Colorado State University, where I got my veterinary degree and an MBA at essentially the same time. And the lead up to that is that at the time period, early 90s, the veterinary profession was going through some downtimes. There was a lot of pessimism. I recently was looking through my old veterinary journals, and there's one in particular that had on the front cover that 66% of new grads left their job after the first year and were dissatisfied with practice. So I was concerned about enjoying the profession and frankly making a living. So I looked at it long and hard, and I decided that I would focus at least somewhat on the business aspects. And so the combination degree served me well, and my focus was on essentially, how do we run well-managed practices that would allow veterinary professionals and the team to focus on practicing medicine and making a living versus having to focus on running the business. And so that was my initial thought. And as it turned out, about 9 months after I got out of school, I ended up purchasing a practice, and it was a $10,000 cash advance on my credit card to a practice owner who did not enjoy practice. Good surgeon, good veterinarian, but he did not like veterinary clients very much. And so he taught me basically that he didn't see his clients until kind of the end of the visits, and he really utilized his staff. So that wasn't my style, but it did teach me to utilize the staff a lot. And so that was my entry into practice ownership at that point.
Awesome. And I mean, that must have been a lot of work to have your DVM and an MBA at the same time. It's awesome. So when you bought your practice, like, did you know you always wanted to do that, to be a practice owner?
Yeah, I mean, two parts. One, at the time, most people, that's just what you did. You graduated and, somewhere along the line, you were thinking you would own a practice. And so there was that part, but I really had a business side to me, and I knew that I wanted to be involved in ownership, and I knew that I wanted to be involved in multi-practice ownership. I looked at some of these traditional one or two doctor hospitals, and people stayed within those four walls for, 20, 30, 40 years. And I felt that that would make me go a little bit stir crazy. But I also felt that you just learned a lot from being able to go to other practices and work together and learn new ideas, share ideas. So the idea of group practice was really near and dear to me from the beginning. And so I ended up my first 5-10 years or so building up a group of practices. So we had about 10 in the Metro Detroit area.
Cool. And you were explaining to me earlier also that now where you are currently working is kind of a combination of different practices. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So continuing with this story, I again ended up building a group of practices called Progressive Pet Animal Hospitals. And we had up to a dozen hospitals, and some of those were part of the be in-field practices. At the time, they allowed you to charter or franchise some of those locations. And somewhere back in around 2015, the Morris family, which owns Banfield, decided they wanted to buy out the franchisees. And so when I sold those practices, I realized that every other week and every other month that many of the practices in my area and frankly across the country were being bought up by the VCAs and Banfields and NVA. And so I decided that I wanted to create an alternative to that was a smaller group of hospitals that was really going to focus on our people and different opportunities that we could provide for our teams. And so it's actually almost 3 years ago now that I merged with the Advanced Animal Hospital Group with Dr. Vic Dillon to form Mission Veterinary Partners. And we were initially focused on the Midwest, but we kind of outgrew the area, and now we're a national group. But again, the idea really was to create an alternative, something that was different, that's really focused on our people and mentorship. And so it's been really gratifying to do that. And I think, again, that we've done something that's a little unique in the profession.
Yeah. And I mean, so owning a practice is something I feel like that a lot of emerging veterinarians and students, they think about a lot, especially at the beginning of their careers. And like, they are usually really excited about being their own boss and having a place that they can, their own place they can care for animals. And having been that, you know, person at a younger age, can you share with us what you think is kind of the most important thing for people to know when it comes to practice ownership, just for the younger generation?
Yeah, and I do get the opportunity to speak with a lot of students and student groups and new graduates, and I think actually a lot of folks have been talked out of the idea of ownership, or that they are going to own a practice. And so I think there's probably 20-25% that still think, you know, ownership is in my future. And again, those are probably the, you know, ones that are see themselves as being more business minded. But I think there's a lot of sentiment in the profession that says, no, you don't want to own, there's too much debt, too much responsibility, do you want to work that hard, it's too expensive, more complex in the past. And so I think that people are being talked out of it, but I do think there's a lot of pros and cons to ownership, and I think that ownership opportunities definitely exist.
Awesome. And so, I mean, what is it really like to be a practice owner? Like, what kind of surprised you when you first started? Is there, I mean, I'm asking you like five questions at once here, but it's like, what's like an average week like? Like, do you organize staff, paperwork? Like, what's it like?
Sure. You know, I think the there's no way around it. As a, you know, small business owner, stereotypically, you're going to be, you know, working really hard. And look, when you start a business, you buy a business, you're hungry, and you're willing to put in the time and effort. And so it is it's a dual role. It depends really to the size practice you buy. So let's say that it is a smaller practice. A lot of times, you know, you end up being, you know, somewhat of the manager, and, you know, you're paying bills, and, you know, maybe you're updating handouts for clients, and you're focused on your marketing. I think the bottom line is that you wear a tremendous amount of hats. And so some people are really good at juggling that, and a lot of folks aren't. Part of the appeal, I think, of joining maybe with a bigger group is that, you know, they've got the expertise in marketing, they've got the expertise in HR. But again, you know, it can be a challenge in terms of all the different things that you have to take care of from the get-go owning your own practice. And some people are really adaptable to it, and other people, you know, don't like it. So I think it's something where you just have to go into that knowing that it can be a lot of work, and it can control a lot of your life.
Yeah. And I guess you can also get a practice manager, correct? Like you can, some people do hire practice managers, some people don't, and they kind of take on some of the admin work.
For sure. And it gets into the debate of, you know, what size practice are you looking at? Are you, a one doctor show or a two or three doctor show? A little bit bigger, you can have a practice manager, or I would argue that you should have one regardless. And so it really comes down to if you're a good delegator. And so I like to think of working smarter versus harder. And so with delegation, yes, having a office manager, practice manager makes life a lot easier. And having somebody that can take care of paying the bills and so on can make life a lot easier. Sometimes that's a family member, sometimes it's the manager, could be your accountant. But I think you want to leverage your time and you may be more productive being the doctor. You just need to, make sure that somebody's covering the bases.
Mm-hmm. And you keep mentioning kind of like, that it sounds like maybe people that should look into this have like certain kinds of qualities, like maybe they're more business minded or they like, that entrepreneur kind of lifestyle. Is that something that like, what kind of characteristics do you think that somebody needs?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a risky business because what you don't know is, am I going to buy this practice and is it going to take off? And so from that aspect, it can be a little bit nerve-wracking and risk. So you've got to be a little bit of a risk taker. And just like with financial planning, when the, money manager or financial planner, looks at your risk tolerance, you've got to, be somewhere on that spectrum where you are willing to take a little bit of risk. And sometimes, does it help to have a little financial support behind you or just support from family or a significant other? All those things can really make a difference. And while I've seen, the most unlikely people succeed that didn't think they would, want to be owners, on the other hand, I think it certainly helps if you know that you want to own and you're willing to, you go into it with the expectation is, I'm going to work hard and make this work.
Mm-hmm. And so, as a young veterinarian or even a student, how can they kind of make the choice to, if they want to open a practice or not, like what's a good way to look at it? And like, should they have a sort of plan before doing so?
Yeah, I really think that you, and this is part of my work harder than smarter, and sometimes, I was probably a little more frugal in some ways than advised. I mean, there's some really good people on your team that can help, and that can be an attorney, it can be your accountant, it could be a consultant. So you really want to cover your bases and give it your best shot. So location is really important. And so you want to either start or buy a practice in a good area. And that can make a huge difference. So looking at demographics, certainly can come into play.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of research beforehand for sure. And so what do you think about like the right time to do this, like quote unquote right time? Is it something that students should look into at the beginning of their career, or should, do you think like just based on your experience that maybe they should kind of work under someone else in a way first to just get the feel of it and then kind of open their practice?
A really important question, Sarah. And I am not a good example 9 months out going out and starting or buying a practice. I think it's really crucial today to put in your time and really build up your medical skills. So first year out, what you learn first year or two is really crucial. So I strongly encourage folks to work in a really busy practice, ideally, multiple doctor, 4, 5, 8 doctor practice or 24-hour practice, and get your medical and surgical skills really down so that you are extremely confident that when you go into practice, you're going to be able to offer all the services to your clientele without hesitation. Practices that succeed are able to handle most medical and surgical cases without turfing them to the specialist, and that makes a big difference on your profit margin. It also is important to build your client base, because the clients want to go to a practice where they're not being sent away for every little thing. And it also, ideally, you're going to be trying to attract other doctors to your practice. And so you're going to be able to offer good mentorship. And so if you can't do the, basic and a little bit advanced surgical procedures, then you're not going to be able to provide that mentorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I also wanted to talk about debt, because I know that's a really big thing. What advice do you have for students who have a lot of debt and they want to kind of own a practice, but it's like, it doesn't add up? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about it before, and in some ways it's a catch-22. So you have a lot of debt. How do you get out of debt? Well, probably the best way to get out of debt is owning a successful veterinary practice. Veterinary practices can be relatively profitable and lucrative, hence the interest by a lot of the big groups to own them. And so it's a little bit of an oxymoron in terms of, okay, you have too much debt to own one. The beauty of it, frankly, is that if you talk to bankers, and there are a number of financial institutions that specialize or have a branch that specialize in veterinary financing, they love veterinarians. We're really hard workers. We default on loans less than MDs and dentists for sure. And so it is really not particularly difficult to get financing. What a bank might want to see in this particular case, if you're starting up a practice, they're going to want to see somebody that is very capable with their medical skills. So they're going to want to see that you've done that multi-doctor practice and that you're a really capable doctor, because then they believe that you can build that business. So I have not seen huge barriers. Now, if you buy an existing practice, it really comes down again, you've got to, be a solid doctor, but they're also going to just look at the profitability of that business. And so, again, I said there are a lot of ways that young veterinarians are talked out of ownership, in the sense that the sentiment is, no, you can't own one for, reasons A, B, and C. The reality is, if you're really interested, I don't find it particularly difficult to find financing for it.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of fear surrounding the whole ownership thing. It's like there's the money and the business side of it is intimidating, maybe, but it sounds doable if you're really passionate, for sure. And so for people who want to do it and they're having those fears and they're thinking, oh, maybe I don't want to do this alone, I want to do this with somebody else, like a partner, how should they find the right person, in your opinion, to partner up with? Is it somebody that has one already that kind of they can jump in and own with them, or somebody maybe from vet school that they met to open it together? What do you suggest?
Yep. And I have seen it all. And sometimes it works well and sometimes not so well. Sometimes someone you know well from school can work really well. I was just looking at a practice today that were two classmates, and that was kind of neat. They've been along, I think it's 20 years they've been in partnership together. It may be somebody that you've worked well with in another practice, and that a lot of times can work out well. And so I think you need to know yourself a little bit. Are you does it appeal to you to own by yourself? Are you afraid of a partnership? Partnership is like a marriage. And on that aspect, some work out really well and others don't. So again, there is some risk, but I think you got to really kind of go through that process of counseling with each other and just really make sure you're on the same page, and probably invite some other people to be part of that discussion. But it is certainly a way to do it, and especially to get into multi-doctor practice, it can work out well.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of have a side note question, but for in terms of pricing, like how does that work? Do you kind of set a price as veterinarian owning your own practice, and does it vary like between practices, or is there a standard that
I would say there, just like for medicine, there's standards of care. I would say there's some standards of pricing for lab work and medications. And when you talk about practice profitability, where a lot of people feel to be less profitable is they're not quite as in tune with, what standard pricing is. You can certainly use some guides from like an AHA and organization and try to set things in the middle or look at, what they find to be, standard pricing. There's nothing wrong with doing some phone shopping and see what the market around you is. But at the end of the day, there's a certain profitability that's, you should be at for that practice. And so you do have to, potentially play with that pricing a little bit. But again, there's a lot of ways you can look into it. Again, what would be a good range for your area. But most of the time, we find that practices are underpriced in their services, and that there's upside potential.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there's just so many things, like you were talking about location before, you have to make a choice on where you want to be, and I guess also the staff that you hire, and then on the marketing side, like, what are you going to name your practice? Like, I guess that's just like a silly thing in my head, but I'm like, maybe all those things, I guess, add up and make a difference, because marketing wise, like, you have to put in effort for that as well too, right? Like, that's something you have to be actively doing.
Correct. And again, when you look at those different hats of marketing, HR, finance, and payables, and talent acquisition, and operations, sometimes it does make your head spin when you think about all the hats you have to wear. And again, that's some of the attraction to the groups, because they bring that support. But, most of these things, frankly, to me, were very achievable. Now, I moved from the day when, you just had a big yellow page in the phone book, and that was a lot of your marketing. It's a little trickier today, and you do have to be, kind of savvy. If anything, we find that most veterinary practices do not do enough marketing, and so they're, the return on investment tends to be really good. And there's a lot of services, again, for solo practice owners that focus on search engine optimization and client communication. So it is not that challenging to do well with the marketing piece, and it may be something that you again delegate to someone in the practice that has an interest, and again, many services to help make sure you're strong in that area.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, now, like, all of these new veterinarians, younger ones who are just coming out of vet school, or even students, like, they're really good at social media, and they already have a following and connections and different, information on there. So I'm just wondering, like, do you have, I mean, I'm not sure if you've ever experienced this or gone through this, but do you have any advice for people who want to take that and kind of, transfer it into real clientele afterwards? So, like, taking their following maybe as a student and putting it into, like, actually getting clients. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Well, it gets back to, like, search engine optimization. When I first started, it wasn't that great. Like, if someone in Michigan, someone in California saw something about dentistry, that didn't help. So local SEO is good, and it would really depend on their following in a, relatively, close proximity to a clinic. But those skills are really valuable. And if you have a good time, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, all those things can make a big difference. And somebody's got to be, mining the shop for that, for sure.
Yeah, no, it'll be definitely really interesting to even see how the changes when it comes to like all these practices and how they reach their own, their clients and how that goes down for sure with like the social media side of it.
Yeah, I mean, you asked about, you know, starting a practice versus, you know, maybe purchasing a practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's pros and cons of each. You know, the beauty, I bought mostly existing practices, but I have started some. But the nice part, if you start one, is you don't have a lot of that, you know, the purchase price involved, but it's hit or miss. I've seen folks that have started a practice and in 3 years they're, you know, $1.5 million practice with 2-3 veterinarians, and I've seen the opposite where someone started one, put a lot of money into it, and not succeeded. So that's kind of the difference between, you know, when you buy one that's already successful, you're spending some dollars on it, but you don't have quite that risk that somebody is with the pure startup.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the risk again, because I want to talk about it. Like, there's a lot of controversy about, I feel like, big hospital companies kind of taking over and leaving smaller practices to struggle. And I mean, I'm sure that a lot of the students who are looking to do this and they want to like have their own practice, they might be worried about the effects of this. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my feeling was that as an individual practice owner, gosh, you know, no one would be offering the customer service that I could, and having that personal relationship with the client. So, look, I think you have that advantage when you own your own personal hospital. But you, again, it can wear on you if you're a 1 or 2 doctor practice and you're, you know, working every weekend or long hours. And, so I think it is very doable for the right person. What becomes a challenge, and one of the biggest challenges now, is talent acquisition. So, can you build a practice, and then can you find other, whether it's technicians or doctors, to come and work for you? So the competitive part is, can you offer the same benefits and the same compensation that a larger group will offer? And I think you can, but you just have to be aware of that, and you have to, you know, have a long-term view and make the right moves and you know, build that practice so it's an appealing place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I wanted to also ask you about the mental health side, because I know you were saying that like a couple of times that like it is a hard job for sure. There's a lot of different facets to it and it can be training. And like, based on your experience, how do you kind of balance everything?
Mine certainly was by delegation. And so I know for my wife, as I bought, you know, the next hospital and the next hospital, she's like, you're going to be working more and more. The reality is, I was trying to work myself kind of out of a job. And so it really comes down to having, you know, strong people in place. So there's a lot of leadership needed in a hospital. And if you find those leaders and help train them, then, you know, you're not taking it all upon yourself. And that aspect makes it quite doable. But again, you have to know your personality and if you have that leadership style. And veterinarians tend to be very type A and perfectionist. And so you have to be able to trust other people to manage and lead and sometimes get out of their way. So again, I think there are a lot of opportunities out there, and certainly in terms of purchasing practices, I mean, the groups basically are interested in larger hospital, let's say $1.5 million or more. So if someone purchases a practice between $500,000 to $1 million, that's 1 or 2 doctors. And if they can build that up, you know, that can be a very, you know, viable business for them.
Mm-hmm. So what, like whenever you talk to somebody about practice ownership, what are the misconceptions that people usually have?
Yep. And again, I think it gets back to the idea that you're, again, being kind of talked out of doing it, and that you're not going to be able to hire folks to, you know, help work the clinic with you. There's going to be people that are interested in working for that smaller practice. And the other is, as you touched on, I'm not going to be able to get any financing. And again, you know, I'm going to be, you know, knocked out of business by the bigger practices. So I think some of those things are, you know, are not really true. But again, you've got to, you know, work hard to make sure they don't come true.
Yeah, there you go. See, you can do it. You heard it here. But the last kind of question I have for you about this stuff is really just like a personal experience. Like, can you share a story about a personal experience that you had kind of during your early years of ownership that you look back on and you're like, wow, that kind of shaped me?
Yeah, I talked about the first practice that I worked in, Elm Animal Hospital, and the doctor just, he was a good doctor, good surgeon, didn't like people very much. So he really, in essence, utilized the staff a lot. And that taught me to focus on the medical side of things and let the team do a lot of the technical skills. So that made a big difference as I went on to owning practice numbers 1 and 2. And I also I had my arrangement with him was at the end of the year, I bought the practice. I put a down payment on April 15th. And I had an option at the end of the year, either to lose my $10,000 down payment or to keep the practice. And at that end of that year, there was more money in the bank than my starting salary. So a veterinary practice is a solid business. And so I think for anybody that, again, is business-minded and wants to look at it from the business perspective, you know, there are opportunities to make it into a good business.
Yeah, and I guess, like, I mean, this is also a side note question, but I'm just imagining, like, owning your own practice and how you were saying that it's very, you know, the customer service is very important to a lot of the clients, and it's, like, a really good experience. So, like, I guess you have to have lots of qualities, but do you find yourself being like really involved in talking to lots of different people and being kind of this, how do I explain? Like you have to be very open and conversational. Do you have to be like outgoing in that way? Or is that something that is not necessary?
It's a really apropos question. I talk a lot about, you know, owning the exam room and you're an actor on the stage. And, you know, because a lot of people work on production and you've got to be a good communicator and have clients have buy-in to, you know, what you're recommending and saying. And so, you know, I think, again, there are a lot of people that you mentioned that may not be, you know, X personality that I see do just really fine. As a matter of fact, most veterinarians are somewhat of introverts and they do just fine. So yeah, I think you come out of that shell and do what you have to do and that's not a problem.
Yeah, for sure. I guess it just depends. That was just a question off the top of my head that I was just wondering. But yeah, so thank you so much for taking the time to share your advice and experiences with us and the listeners. And we want to end every podcast with just a little Q&A about you, about our special speaker. And it's just like quick questions. So the first one is, what is your ultimate career goal?
Mine really is to make a career in veterinary medicine. I talked about the well-managed practice. And so I want to make sure that the really great people in the profession can make a living and a career out of, you know, being veterinarians or technicians or just part of the team. So I want everybody, I want them to be happy with this career choice. And that's really the goal. And, you know, what I saw as one of the, you know, we'll call it mission veterinary partners, of course. But that's, you know, what it was about, you know, making life better for our people. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to own that business, but we can provide, you know, great benefits and career opportunities and mentorship. So that's what it's about for me.
Cool. And do you have like a quote or like a philosophy that you live by that inspires you?
Well, I, a lot of times will when end a presentation with three of them that have been with me from veterinary school. And so I usually will end with sound body, sound mind. I'm a big workout person, but I just think that those things keep you well balanced. Work hard, play hard, and in life it's risks and rewards. So I know you asked for one, but those are probably three that make me tick.
No, that's perfect. And they kind of are similar in a way. It's like balancing, you know, a lot of balance is really important, sounds like.
Yeah. And it gets back to, I really think culturally in practice, it is about work-life balance. And that's, again, what we try to achieve with a group like ours.
Awesome. And who inspires you to continue to make a change in the industry?
Again, it goes back to the team. I'm here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where we got the Michigan Wolverines, and that was their old coaches saying, it's the team. But yeah, I think we need to be proactive, all of us, to make sure that this is a great profession for the future, for our people and for our clientele and pets. So I think we're moving in the right direction to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, this question actually just relates exactly to what you were just saying, but what is your hope for the veterinary industry when it comes to practice ownership? So I guess on like the big scale of like the next generation.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have a number of large players and large groups out there, and I think, you know, you find which organization works best for you, but I do think that there's going to be opportunities for ownership in some of these groups, so that, and you're seeing that in human medicine too, so being able to have a partnership. We do joint ventures with some of the other groups too. So I think there's some models here where we can work together and provide profit sharing and ownership opportunities for folks. So I think it's going to be mixed and hybrid. And I do think there's going to be some real centers of excellence that are, you know, privately owned. So I think you'll have talented, motivated veterinarians come together, merge hospitals and you know, run their own show. But I think all in all, the profession from a medical and surgical standpoint is going to be stronger for it, and also provide a lot more opportunities for career growth for folks.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And so where can people find you if they want to reach out, like email, social media, website, etc.?
Sure. So email-wise, it's jeff.rothstein, which is R-O-T-H-S-T-E-I-N, at mvetpartners.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn. And so those are great ways to get a hold of me. And I'm really happy for folks to reach out, and happy to answer any questions or advice or point folks in the right direction as well.
Yeah, and does your group have an Instagram account by any chance?
We do, and I'm not the best one to ask, but certainly you can go to missionvetpartners.com, and everything, you know, about Mission Veterinary Partners and contact information is there. And
oh,
so
perfect.
I would encourage people to certainly check us out. A lot of great information on what we're about.
Awesome. So thank you again, Dr. Rothstein, and we really appreciate you being with us. And a big thank you to our Next Pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. Join us next month for another in-depth talk.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Appreciate it.